listening to CFAC 960 AM, Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Live from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Owned and operated by Rogers Media. Also streaming at sportsnet.ca/960.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Calgary, the boys on the big show are talking sports right now. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
It's Wednesday. Bruce Dobigan with you, the Doughboy. It's the big show. The day after the big signing, El Capitan Mark Giordano signed yesterday. 6-year deal at 6.75 million dollars U.S., which works out to be about 9 million Canadian. An interesting deal, as we found out yesterday. In a couple of minutes, we're going to talk to the man who did the deal on the other side, the agent for Mark Giordano. Rich Winter going to talk to us a little bit about Gio's contract and a little bit about how things have changed in this summer. If you haven't noticed, of course, the economy seems to be falling apart, at least the stock market is. And that is changing things. The dollar is dropping. That is changing things salary cap-wise, contract-wise. When we talk to Rich, hopefully bring us up to date on how this is changing things. Would you list the Mark Giordano signing as one of the 10 most important days in the history of Calgary sports? I don't think so. It's a big one. Certainly a big. I guess it'd get in the top 50, especially if the Flames go on to win a Stanley Cup. Just before, you know, laughs and giggles and all that sort of stuff, we've decided we've made a top 10 list. We posted it, in fact, on the website. Go to the website. You can see it. Under my signature, the top 10 sports events in Calgary history. Won't be surprised by number one. I think everybody would largely agree with it. There's some controversial ones in there. There's some other ones that, no-brainers. Maybe the goal from Martin Gélinas should be higher up in the rankings. How do you feel about it? We're opening up the text line. We want to hear your reactions. The top 10. Go to the website. Take a look at it. Give us your suggestions in about, I'm supposed to say that the text line is 960-960. There you go. But you knew that already. I'm the only one who doesn't know that. So send us your ideas on what you think the top 10 should be, what you think our list is like. Then at about 25 after, half past, Will Nault and I will take a first run at the list. We'll go through all 10 for you. Our idea, or at least my idea, for the top 10 sports moments in Calgary history. Rob Kerr coming on at 2 o'clock this afternoon. That could be one of your top 10 moments in sports history, although I think probably not. Happens every day. So we'll go through that list. A little later this hour, Matt Stajan, veteran center for the Calgary Flames. He's excited. He's excited about the Mark Giordano signing. He spends his summers, like Gio does, in Toronto. And so he reacted when he talked today to the sister station, Fan 590 out of Toronto, talking about how excited he is about what's gone on with this signing. What does it mean? And where do we go next, actually? I think we're about 20 minutes into the discussion of Gio before people, I think Elliot Friedman was the first one to say, well, yeah, what about Sean Monahan? What's going to happen with him? Now everybody's going to start getting their knickers in a twist over Sean Monahan and whether he's going to get the money. Will he go bridge contract? Will he give him the full meal deal? Just the way it goes. You get one thing done and then another thing crops up. Now, a special thing we should tell you about. Tomorrow morning on the morning show. Now, Boomer's away. So Pinder is hanging on to things. He and Lubor are hanging
Boomer's
on.
Boomer's on vacation?
Boomer's on vacation.
That can't be.
He's practicing sausage rolling for the Bonton.
He never goes on vacation.
Well, he is. He's sitting in the backyard trying to avoid his kids and his wife. He's probably got like sausages stuck in his ears, trying to avoid everything. In any event, Rob Kerr tomorrow morning between 8 and 9. It'll be your hour to contact Ken King, president of the Calgary Flames. The man behind Calgary Next, the project for building the new arena stadium concept. He was on last week and explaining his side of the story, the Flames side of the story, why they think this project should be built, why there should be some public money for it, how it should be done, what will they do with the creosote, etc. And Rob and I talked about it earlier this week. And, you know, there's kind of a little bit of dissatisfaction in the sense that, you know, some of the stuff after all these years seemed a little sketchy. So tomorrow between 8 and 9, Rob is going to come on to the Boomer's show because Boomer's away. He's going to come in here and take the big chair. And he and Ken King live will take your calls, hopefully answer your questions, get some meat on those bones, find out what's going on. As I say, Rich Winter going to join us this hour. Apparently, maybe he's negotiating for somebody else at the moment. We're trying to get him in his stead. Let's take a quick listen, a quick boo to Matt Stajan this morning. Oh, hang on. Is that the phone looks like it's gone through. There we go. We got Rich Winter on the line. We'll listen to Matt Stajan just a little bit later in the hour, talk to him about his thoughts on what it all means. But in the meantime, as I say, Rich Winter, veteran agent, I've known him probably, I'd say about 25 years or so. I got to know him back in the Allen Eagleson days when he was one of the few people with the cojones to stand up to Eagleson and do something about it and file complaints against him. And so I've watched Rich's career and seen him negotiate deals, many deals over the years. I don't think anyone more important, at least contract-wise, to the city of Calgary and the Flames fans than the one that was announced yesterday. And I'm joined by Rich Winter. Talk a little bit about it. How you doing, Rich?
I'm off. Really doing well, Bruce. You?
Well, you have to live in Edmonton, but otherwise you're okay, right?
Oh, but I live on the River Valley. It's beautiful. I watch canoes come by every way, and I think to myself, how brown it is in Calgary.
It isn't brown this year, actually.
This year, I was there. My daughter moved there. I've been there quite a bit because of that. And it's beautiful this year. Really nice.
How green is our valley? All right. Try to give me the two-sentence story about this contract, what it was like from you and Gio's point of view.
You mean getting Brad to call us back on time or the meat and potatoes?
Well, you've already told us one thing. Are you telling us?
Oh, I hope he's listening, actually. Brad's a really good guy. I think it was just a lot of struggle around term. I mean, it became an interesting dynamic as the Canadian dollar kept falling, and it really changed the whole, you know, really a lot of the dynamics around the negotiations. I think July 1st had a little bit of an impact as we saw older players really not getting the term that they used to. And I think it's created a growing concern with older players that, you know, you look around at some of these other teams with these contracts going into 39, 40 and beyond. I think teams are starting to get increasingly nervous because the cap's not doing what they expected it to, or it doesn't look like it will. So it doesn't look like there's going to be any room for errors in judgment. And so those dynamics just made it interesting and different and difficult. I think the term was really challenging for the Flames to get to where we ended up. Gio didn't want to push much beyond that because just by his nature, he would never want to be in a situation where he was being paid to do something he was no longer capable of. So he was quite content with 6 years, even though other players may have pushed for a little longer. So it took them a while to get there, and then there was the normal tugging back and forth on the numbers, but we got that managed at least over time. Which was the biggest one?
You mentioned the July 1st and some of the veteran contracts. What were a couple of those ones that raised the red flag for you?
Well, I don't think it was a particular one. Just the fact that this just was no term out there this year, you know? So it was really just an overwhelming feeling. And I talked to a couple of other agents over the course of this negotiation, and they found that to be a tough struggle. J.P. Barrie was talking about the Sedins deals in Vancouver, and, and so I talked with JP and some other people, and you know, term is the battlefield now, and I think rightly so, because you know, you've got to be very careful in this sort of cap world, especially now that it's leveling off. You know, you can't have two 38-year-old players underperforming and making big money or having large cap hits.
Yeah, I think people feel when they hear about negotiations, they think it's just you and the player talking to the organization, but both sides are canvassing the whole industry and talking to people in the industry as this is going on, and sometimes talking to people in the financial industry as well, I presume, to predict where you think the dollars are going.
Well, I think sometimes it's just by osmosis. You know, I ran into JP at the you know, at the Hockey Canada tryouts. It just happens, you know, you talk to people. And so it's not, you know, seek out a little bit. But, yeah, you're just trying to figure it out. I mean, the Canadian dollar is one. You know, it's a lot of people, you know, we're looking at China and looking at to China's decreased demand and how that affects our economy and making at least some educated guesses of how that might affect Geo. But, you know, as the dollar dropped, the compensation to Geo in Canadian dollars was growing. So that also had an impact on in his decision. Ultimately,
explain what that meant, what you meant there, Rich.
Well, see, because when we started negotiation, you know, $6.5 million or $7 million U.S. was about $7 million Canadian, a little bit more. When we finished negotiating, you know, $6.75 U.S. was close to $9 million Canadian. So it had a huge impact. I mean, he is Canadian. He has no plans to live outside Canada. So without any assistance from the Flames, compensation continued to rise in Canadian dollars incredibly over the course of this negotiation. So that had an impact on the ultimate number because 6.75 wasn't the 6.75 we were talking about when we first started.
You have handled many players over the years. I've known a bunch of your clients, guys, different types, different personalities. Tell me what was unique about working with Geo.
Well, he's really a smart guy, and he really understands what he wants. We do goal setting with our players, and a lot of people, I don't know if a lot of agents do it to the detail that we do it, but I really talk a lot to the players about where do you want to live, what are your concerns about taxes, family, team, your role in the team, your relationship with the organization. And so I think as we went through this, Geo had a really firm commitment to the Calgary Flames that was really buoyed up in a deep understanding of what was important to him. So he went into this negotiation knowing that it was going to be very difficult for another team to beat the Calgary Flames in a negotiation. Sure, could he have got more money? Brad mentioned that in some of his interviews yesterday and that ended up in newspapers, you know, that, yeah, Geo could have got a lot more, probably. But where? Not from a team that he's the captain of. I mean, he was really close to, he really wanted to lead this team. He's really feeling they're at the, you know, at the crossroads of something special. And, you know, Geo wanted to be in Calgary. He wanted to be their leader. And I think what was really different, money is it was important as part of this negotiation, but Geo was so concerned about how this would affect his team and their competitiveness. He is the captain of the Calgary Flames, and he wears that C with a great deal of pride and a great deal of responsibility. And that's not the norm anymore. You know, guys get to be 34 and they just exit and go somewhere else, or 33. Or Geo really wanted to be here, and it was sincere, and it weighed in on every single day of these negotiations. But I want to be here. And, of course, we didn't tell them that much, but that often. But it really was different. It was just his loyalty to an organization that he'd grown up in was unique.
Talking with Rich Winter, who was the agent for Mark Giordano in these negotiations. You're still working with Claude Lemieux, right?
Yes.
Okay. Handled lots of players, as I say. I've known him going back to the 1980s, I guess. Late 80s, early 90s.
Oh, no, that couldn't be true. I think I was in elementary school then.
No, well, you were a boy prodigy. That is true. I was quite amazed that an 11-year-old child was handling players' contract negotiations at the time. But, yes, you are a young guy.
Yeah. Al Burton, growing up in Drumheller. It's the way we all are.
What makes the Flames different to negotiate with? Or unique, I should say, not different. Well, what's unique about negotiating with the Calgary Flames?
That unique, but I do think that, you know, Brad brings a, you know, he brings a much broader perspective. He's got a plan. I don't know every single aspect of it. Much of it he shares with me, but he has a very clear vision, and he's, you know, he isn't about to deviate from it. I don't always agree with him, obviously, but he has a job to do that's different than mine, and I think the Flames organization has become very professional. With Brian there, with his experience, and Brad, I mean, that's one of the more talented hockey operations in the business. I mean, Brad grew up in the Central Hockey League, which he had an ownership interest in. He's built arenas. He's overseen teams. He's overseen multiple teams. You know, he's been in a very difficult situation in Phoenix trying to build a team and manage a payroll. So he brings a lot of experience to the table, and of course Brian's experience really speaks for itself. So the combination is you know, it's just refreshing. I'd rather deal with a group that is that clear on where they're headed. They're not wandering here and there and wishy-washy. And I've even seen it in some of the entry-level contracts that we've negotiated in the last year. They're just very consistent on the way that they operate, which is helpful because, you know, if you're consistent in entry level, you don't get embarrassed by your third round pick getting less than the fourth round pick. And they've really worked hard to bring a level of professionalism that is not unique. I mean, there's a lot of teams, Chicago and Detroit, and a lot of them have run very professionally now. But the level of professionalism over the course of the last couple, 3 years has advanced considerably.
It's interesting you mention that because Rob Kerr and I talk all the time. I said years ago when we finally got the salary cap, I said, look, teams that make a ton of money are going to have money left over and they're going to start spending it in other places. And one of the places I thought they would do this is in management and in training, et cetera. And one of the templates we're seeing now, Rich, is, and you just talked about it with the Flames, we're not just seeing one GM, we're almost seeing a college of people in an organization, a brain trust. Yeah, the GM's there, but there's a president, then there's advisors, et cetera. We're seeing this in place after place after place. Again, how is that changing your business? Because you're still kind of operating just you and the player, right?
Well, no, we have a team of people that we rely on for financial management, some other things. But I think what's interesting, I mean, I think where it hit me, though, you know, Chicago was really the first organization to do this as broadly and effectively as it's now starting to be emulated by other teams. But I remember when Marian Hossa first signed there, he had a bad shoulder, you know, after signing a 12-year deal. They were aware of it.
Your client.
Yeah, my client, Marian Hossa. And so we sat in a meeting around their convention where 12 people were in the meeting in a suite at the hotel room where the convention was held. And I just thought, it just hit me as fascinating that they had two doctors, they had the president, they had the GM, two assistant GMs. And as a group, they're making less mistakes than they would otherwise. There's a lot more, you know, the old Chicago Blackhawks was Bob Pulford and Cindy the secretary. And I think they're running more like a corporation. They're less prone to make mistakes. They're less prone to responding emotionally. It's really been interesting. I find it refreshing because I think capable groups of people are easier to deal with.
Yeah.
Because they're more consistent. They understand the arguments you're making. And you get to closure more quickly.
Is this going to make it more difficult for teams that operate on a lower budget that aren't cap teams that maybe can't afford to do this sort of stuff? Are we going to start seeing the better heel teams having an advantage this way?
Well, I think it's going to be huge because it's really difficult for these teams to compete. I mean, you know, we've seen, you know, at the combine, we've seen teams, low budget teams, I won't name them in particular to pick on them, but would send one scout to the combine. You know, I mean, that can't be an advantage.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's going to be challenging, and I think the cap, a lot of people, it's not just in this area, Bruce, because there is a huge competitive advantage certain cities have over others. I mean, whether people in would like it or not, or Chicago, Los Angeles, New York, those are attractive destinations as compared to some other cities. And I would even, you know, mine included, where I live, and Calgary probably, where I've also lived. I mean, I don't think if you're a young 24, 25-year-old young man or 27-year-old unrestricted free agent, you're going to be attracted, you and your wife are going to be attracted to Calgary and Edmonton as easily as you're going to be attracted to a Chicago or Los Angeles.
Right. Talking with Rich Winter, the agent for Mark Giordano, agent for a lot of well-known hockey players. Let's get back to where we started off in terms of how the market has changed. You made a point there about the Flames having the advantage with the difference in the Canadian dollar. Now, who knows? Currencies go up and go down, but typically I don't see this changing much for 2 years. Do we see Canadian teams having an advantage here to be signing guys at a dollar figure that's lower in American but still gives them a really nice take home in Canada?
No, I think it depends on the player. Gio is Canadian, plans to live in Canada, so I think it's a huge advantage. Would it be an advantage for, you know, if you're negotiating with Phil Kessel or, Patrick Kane or one of these un-Americans? Probably not. But I think it does give you an advantage. You just can't help but realize what you're getting in local currency where you're planning to live.
Yeah. Plus, I think we've talked about this before, too. Alberta still, you know, has some drawbacks, perhaps, but the tax structure here is very good for athletes, isn't it?
Yeah, it's attractive. And I do think there's different types of players. Like, a lot of players pine for the opportunity to play in an environment where, I remember when Peter Sikora came here having played in New Jersey and won two cups and then played in Anaheim and went to the finals. But when he came to Edmonton, he said he couldn't tell you the number of times he's gassing up and someone's going, "Hey, Pete, good luck tonight." And so there are players that really enjoy being in our environment where hockey is really at the heart of almost everything we do from a sports and entertainment perspective. So, yeah, I don't think we're as challenged as people think, but we're challenged. Certain players don't like the limelight, and I think the Montreals, the Calgarys, the Edmontons, the Canadian teams are not as attractive to those teams. I don't think it's as much the weather and things that people would traditionally think. It's just some people don't like the limelight. They like to go to work and they like to go to the beach.
So as I said, when we were just getting on the phone, I was just making the remarks that, of course, as soon as Gio's contract was made, everyone started to talk about Sean Monahan, what's going to happen, et cetera. We're heading into a new climate, as you just described. Give us your sort of, you know, back of the envelope notes on what you see going forward now. What are we looking at the next 18 months to 2 years that might influence you going shorter term or longer term or whatever? Just give us your sort of back of the envelope assessment of where the market is going to go.
Well, I just think, it's really hard to pinpoint generalities, but I think outside of, you're going to struggle to get term with older players. I think you're going to want to go shorter term. I mean, I don't think this economy can be in the toilet for a long time, but, we're hearing things from Alberta's perspective with the reduced cost of solar energy coming on board and the lack of demand in places like China. I mean, it's going to be tough for a long time. So I think, you're going to see a lot of struggle. A lot of agents are going to want to get those long-term deals that they have been getting for the younger players. They're not coming. I think you're going to have to make real educated decisions on what you have as a player. And if you have a rising asset like a Johnny Gaudreau or Sean Monahan or Freddie Anderson or Hampus Lindholm, who I represent in Anaheim, you're going to have to be real careful to lock in for too long, because what you're going to lock in for is it's going to be a lot tougher.
Yeah,
to get the numbers that they have been getting. And that adjustment's going to be hard for young players to accept, because they're going to look at a guy. I talked to Stan Bowman about this a couple days ago, and about the 10.5 he's got tied up in Kane and Taze. But he said, Rich, you have to look at what the environment was when we signed those deals. Those guys thought they were 12 or 13. We just signed that big television contract in Canada where projections were the cap was going to 80. So they were making decisions at that time with a different set of expectations. And so what young players are going to face now is they're not going to get those deals, and there's going to be a sense of envy and jealousy in some cases. And it's going to take some time for people to accept that there's going to be a correction in the market, and won't be necessarily the case with the really good young players. But it's going to be tough on all of us, because we're not going to get the deals in some cases that guys got last year.
As always, Rich, a fount of information, lots of great stuff in there for the fans to digest, and because we all have to be economists now going forward. If we're fans of a team, we've got to understand where it's going. Lots of good stuff in there for us. I appreciate you taking the time today, and hopefully you'll come down to Calgary. Hey, maybe we'll do a book together.
I would love to do that, Bruce. You know how much affection I have for you. I've known for you for a long time, and I'm glad you're close to home rather than in Toronto. It's good that you're out here, and we'll see you soon, I hope.
Anytime, come on down. Thanks very much, Rich.
Thanks, Bruce.
There you go. Rich Winter, agent for Mark Giordano. Yeah, I've known him a while. We had some moments, I'll tell you, back in the Eagleson days. Interesting moments. And a guy, listen, he has a reputation in the business as being a cutting-edge guy. We talked about one of the stories that's in the Grant Fuhr book, but we talked about it in terms of how to make money for players. It was Rich that came up with the idea for putting Pepsi-Cola ads on Grant Fuhr's pads back in the late 80s. The Oilers were having trouble meeting payroll, keeping up with the salary spiral. They couldn't afford guys like Paul Coffey. They couldn't afford guys like Grant Fuhr. So Rich came up with this idea that maybe put Pepsi ads on the pads for Grant Fuhr. That would allow Grant to make more money, to stay in Edmonton, and everyone would be happy. Well, of course, the rules were then, as they are now, that a player cannot profit from individual advertising on his jersey or his uniform or his equipment. But that's the kind of thing that Rich often does, things outside the box, and we appreciate his time today. Lots to chew on there. A couple of things that I'm sure Rob Kerr will want to pick up on. One of the things we want to pick up on is your sense of the top 10 sports moments in Calgary history. How many of them are Flames moments? How many Stamps moments? How many Olympic moments? The Rocket was a little upset that I didn't put any Cannons moments in there. No 88s moments. But hey, listen, that might be yours. When we come back, we're going to go through the top 10 listed. Now, it's on Sportsnet. You can see it on the website, sportsnet960.ca. You can go on there. You'll see the column, the top 10 sports events of all time by for Calgary fans. We'll go through that when we come back. Bruce Dobigan with you back after this.
Calgary summers may be short, but Sportsnet 960 is always on. No matter the news, we have it first. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
The Big Show, brought to you by Comedy Cave. If it's comedy you crave, come to The Cave. Tickets are always $10. Comedy's so good, you'll whip out your funny bone. Go to comedycave.com.
Calgary, the boys on the Big Show are talking sports right now. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Bruce Dobigan back with you Wednesday afternoon. Don't forget tomorrow, 8 to 9, live. Ken King of the Flames taking your calls on the stadium project. Suppose you can call him about the Mark Giordano thing, although that seems solved. You can ask him maybe about Sean Monahan if you want. I think largely, though, people want to know what's going on with the arena. Still a lot of questions. What was happening? Why was there not as much detail maybe as some people wanted? Ken King will be live taking your calls for a full hour with Rob Kerr tomorrow morning. It's on the morning show with Rob Kerr. Once again, he's jumping in ahead of me, stealing the headlines. Instead of letting me do that interview, that's okay. I don't want to get up at 8. He'll be on for the whole hour. So mark that in your calendar. Get up early. Give it a listen. If you go on the website today, you can see we've posted a story. I thought I'd put a couple of stories on the website over the next little while. You may remember in the old days of the Herald, we had a column called I Don't Like Mondays. And we're going to try and do some I Don't Like Mondays columns for the Herald, for the fan website. The first one, I thought, you know, if you're going to start somewhere, why don't you start big? And the idea was the 10 greatest moments in Calgary sports history. The 10 greatest. Yeah, some seem obvious, but it can't all be Flames. It can't all be Stampeder stuff. So we've tried to make a list here. We want to know, though, if you've got a few. Maybe somebody wants a Calgary Cannons series. Was it 1993, the big year for the Cannons, I think? That's what the Rocket says. Maybe you want to get that one in. Maybe there's more of the Flames stuff you want to get. Maybe the Hitman. I didn't put a Hitman moment in here. But the top 10 list, we're going to go through it right now. To no one's surprise, the top sports highlight.
You want to start with number 10, Bruce?
You want to go the other way?
I think we should.
All right.
Everybody knows what number one is.
That is true. Number 10, in what might be the most famous image ever for a Calgary athlete, Theo Fleury slides the entire length of Northland's ice to celebrate his overtime goal against the Oilers that beats them in Game 6, 1991. If you remember that, you can see the video today. Mark Messier dangling at center ice. I'm a star. I don't even have to look where I'm passing it. Put it right on Fleury's stick. Total gift. Fleury goes in, beats Grant Fuhr with a close-up shot to win the game. Now, this was the last Battle of Alberta playoff series to date. And Fleury's frantic reaction, which you see all the time, everywhere, set up Game 7 in Calgary. Calgary had all the momentum. They were coming home. They'd been the better team on the regular season. They lost Game 7 to the Oilers, which is why it's number 10 and not number 1 on our list. Took the Flames 13 years to win another postseason series. That's number 10 on our list. Number 9, an Olympic moment. You don't have the audio for Fleury? You don't have Theo running around?
No, I just have this one.
The sixth player in Flame history to score 50 goals in one season has scored twice tonight. He is one shy of the 50-goal plateau. Here's Gilmore into the Vancouver zone in the slot area to Fleury. He passes and he scores! Number 50 for Fleury! Aaron Fleury has got his 50th goal! A celebration on the ice as Fleury's 50th gives the Flames a 7-2 win and the crowd has got a few.
And, Bruce, that would be, of course, Theo Fleury scoring 50 goals.
50 goals. I thought they should have never given him the record over Babe Ruth. You know, passing Babe Ruth, that's the wrong sport. People, you know, Theo's life has been so dramatic in many ways. People forget just how he came out of the blue. In some respects, it's a little bit like the Johnny Gaudreau effect. You know, he came out of nowhere, a small guy. Oh, he can't survive. He'll never survive. And he was just the right tonic for the Flames at the right time and helped push them through a lot of those series. Number nine, Kyle Schufelt of Calgary wins the gold medal in the men's floor exercises at the Olympics in Athens in 2004. Now, this was the first ever medal by a Canadian in gymnastics and the first Canadian gold medal of the 2004 Olympics. Now, till Schufelt's dramatic emergence, gymnastics, a wasteland for Canada. It was one of those ones you just wrote off. Going into the Olympics, don't bother. If that's all there is on the TV today, I'll go golfing. But he changed that. Now, the other thing that makes it a great moment is that it didn't even look like Schufelt was going to even make it to the Olympics. He hurt his ankle earlier in the year. A lot of people thought he wouldn't be, if he got there, he wouldn't be in full tilt. He won the gold medal to much everyone's surprise. Just fantastic performance. Follows that up with a bronze at the World Championships. His 2004 performances are the greatest ever in Canadian history in the sport of gymnastics. I don't know if gymnastics isn't that big a deal. But from wee Calgary, tiny Calgary, to go and win the gold medal like that, that's number nine. Number 10, once again, one of Calgary's, you know, proudest sons, Ken Reid. He becomes the first North American male to win a downhill World Cup race at Val d'Isère, France, December the 7th, 1975. It's a big deal for Ken, but it also introduced the era of the Crazy Canucks, a group of daredevil men skiers. They challenged the perennial European dominance of the event from that day on. Now, only Steve Podborski won a world downhill title, but Reed and his comrades won a significant number of races that put Canada on the skiing map. People used to get up on Saturday mornings to see how they'd done, go to CBC TV and watch it. Reid, of course, became a big member of the IOC and also an integral part of the Calgary sports scene long after his retirement, still a guy who people see around town. So number eight, Ken Reid gets the Crazy Canuck era off on the right foot, winning the downhill at Val d'Isère in 1975. 1986 brings us highlight number seven. It was the blunder by defenseman Steve Smith, the rookie defenseman for the Oilers, gives the Flames a playoff series win over their Alberta rivals and breaks the Oilers' bid for five consecutive cups. You know it, you love it. Even though he was on the bench, Perry Berezan got credit as Smith sent the clearing pass in off the pads of goalie Grant Fuhr. That eliminates the Oilers and sends Calgary to the Cup Finals, where they lose in five games to Montreal and its star goalie Patrick Roy. It's almost as important a goal in the history of the Oilers because of it breaking the scheme, breaking the record. And I know from talking to Grant Fuhr, in many respects, he never got over it. It was a huge blow to him, letting that puck go in. And, of course, as we know, Will, our friend Mr. Smith shows up in Calgary later on in his career.
Sure
and,
does.
And he talks Grant Fuhr into coming playing his final season with the Calgary Flames. So it all came full circle. That's number seven. Number six. After 23 years of frustration, Jerry Keeling and the Stampeders win the 1971 Grey Cup game over Toronto, their first cup win since 1948. Now, in a game that was marked by the infamous Leon McQuay fumble on the wet turf at Vancouver's Commonwealth Stadium, Calgary wins 14-11. People forget this, but there was the rule was changed after this game, but a controversial punt attempt by Harry Aboffs of the Stamps in the final minutes seals the win over the Argos. He was the last one to touch it when it went out of bounds. He kicked it out of bounds. That meant the Stamps kept the ball. They ran out the clock and won the Grey Cup. Now, in the days before the Flames arrived in town to be the biggest sports event, a Grey Cup win by the Stampeders caused for an ecstatic civic celebration and the end of a lot of frustration for people here in town. I remember that game very well. And much like the Grant Fuhr boo-boo, Leon McQuay's fumble is ingrained in Toronto sports history, and may it burn forever. Highlight number five, after 7 years outside the playoffs, without a postseason series win since 1989, this is what happens.
The dramatic pause. Different goal, but same playoff run.
All right.
The puck's in the left corner in the Red Wing zone. The Flames have it. Conroy goes behind the net. He's wrapped up by Lang. The puck into the left corner for Aginla. Aginla to the left circle. Aginla shot. Joseph save. Rebound. He scores! Yeah, baby! Yeah, baby!
Tie scores! The Flames win it! 1-0! Yeah, baby!
It's at least three or four yeah babies there for my friend Pete.
Three.
Mar.
My favorite
that
story
game?
From that game, too, is after Pete has been telling the story for years, but goes down after and kind of all embarrassed because really the Flames didn't win anything at that point. Yeah. They beat won the series to go to the West Final, but hadn't won anything like that. So he kind of was a little bit embarrassed with the with the goal call. And Daryl said, "Stop it. It was great."
It
and,
was.
Just one of those funny moments.
Baby.
Yeah.
Well, the moment we've picked is another goal by Martin Zelenov from that same year.
The series before.
Marty Zelenov with the overtime winner in Game 7 against them Canucks. And the Flames win the opening round series. I was at the game, of course, at the Pacific Coliseum, whatever they called it.
General Motors Place,
whatever they called it at that time. And if you remember, in the last minute, Flames on the power play, and yet somehow the Canucks managed to score, send it to overtime. Everyone in the building thinks that's it. Them Flames is done like dinner. And they come out, and after a fantastic save, Mika Kiprusoff absolutely robs the Canucks at one end. They go back the other end. Flames win, and move on against the Red Wings, who, of course, you just heard them beating. That was their year of the Red Mile, rocking all spring 2004. Jerome Iginla, Mika Kiprusoff, a spring that will live forever in Calgary memory. They became an elite team after that, but they never were able to match the run of 2004. The fourth top highlight, Calgary Stampeders win the 48th Grey Cup, their first ever CFL title. Most important, the Stampeders, with their cowboy hats and their horses, begin the tradition of Western hospitality at the game, which was, in those days, typically held in Toronto at Varsity Stadium. They brought the horses, went into the Royal York Hotel. Stamps finished the regular season a perfect 12-0, still the only team in Canadian pro football history to have an unbeaten record. They defeated the Ottawa Rough Riders at the Grey Cup game, one that will be celebrated forever in Calgary. Number three, not a surprise here, Atlanta Flames, purchased for a record $16 million by Nelson Scalbania. You may remember he was sort of fronting for a Calgary consortium that included Harley Hotchkiss, Ralph Schofield, Norm Green, the Seaman brothers, etc. And the team was moved to Calgary. Now, until the Saddle Dome was built in 83, the team played in the Corral, capacity 7,700, and they quickly experienced success under the tutelage of GM Cliff Fletcher. By 86, teams in the Stanley Cup Finals. By 89, they'd won the Cup. But Flames fans, I don't think they'll ever forget the high boards and the double-decker benches of those early days. Certainly Peter Marr has some great stories about what it was like to call games in the barn. Number two, the second highest, most important moment in Calgary sports history. The 15th Winter Olympic Games opened in Calgary, February 13th, 1988. The ceremony at McMahon Stadium brings to an end the dream for COTA that dated back to 1979. The efforts of Frank King and many people in this city brought the Games to Southern Alberta. Calgary won the right to the Games in 1981 in Germany. And while the Games did not produce a gold medal for Canada, that's why Vancouver was such a big deal when Canadian athletes won gold medals there. People like Eddie the Eagle Edwards were more than enough. He stole the show, the English guy, with his, we'll call it ski jumping, his efforts at ski jumping. The Games were considered a huge success for the city as the efficient running of them put Calgary on the map. It was also the financial spinoff from the event that continues to this day. Canada Olympic Park, Winsport, Nikiska, and many other facilities. And there's a lot of cities, Will, that wish they could say that they had any kind of spinoff after the Olympics.
It's very true. You see a lot of facilities just kind of stay there and nobody ever touches them. And you see those pictures of the rundown stadiums and all this money, but obviously great use in Calgary.
Well, we take it for granted here. It's a minor miracle that it didn't happen to Calgary. And it's one of the reasons I think the IOC doesn't want to go back to Calgary is because we actually know what we're doing and we would know how to do it properly and they wouldn't fleece us for tons of money. The top highlight, the greatest moment in Calgary sports history.
And over at that Flame bench, there's all kinds of excitement going on there. Over at the penalty box, Jim Poplinski and Tim Hunter, not dressed tonight, have joined Al McInnes. They've got their sweats on, and the Calgary Flames have won the Stanley Cup! We're the winners! We're the winners! Yeah, baby! Yeah, baby! Yeah, baby! And the Flames coming out to celebrate out on the ice now as the Calgary Flames have won the Stanley Cup for the first time in their history. And they do it here in the Montreal Forum.
There you go. Three yeah babies, two we're the winners. Pete was laying it on with a trowel, but that's what you do when you win the Stanley Cup. It was a remarkable game in every respect, of course. The Flames winning when Edmonton didn't was obviously important, but they didn't have to beat Edmonton this time to get there. Edmonton disappeared early in the process, and then the Flames came up against the Montreal Canadiens, who were the ones who had given them a hard time in 86. They turned the tables. It's the first and only time that game when the Flames won in Montreal, first and only time the Habs have lost the Stanley Cup on home ice. Doug Gilmore, the winner. Colin Patterson, the first goal of the game, got the Flames off on the right foot. And, of course, it also marks the final NHL game for the man who likes to drop into the studio unannounced, one and only Lanny McDonald. No surprises there. Do you have one? Did I miss one there? Have you got one that you...
Those are all pretty good. I had a couple suggestions on the text line, but, you know...
What's the text line saying?
Let's see what the text line has to say here. Where did you put Habib Bulin's save in 2004? That's obviously not on the list. And people, I guess, always talk about that moment in that 2004 Stanley Cup final, but if it was in or not. I'm not sure that's a significant enough moment to put on the list, but no doubt about
it's a negative moment. We're talking about
people
positive
know
moments,
that one for sure.
Yeah.
The 1970 CFL Western Final, Larry Robinson kicks a game-winning field goal in wintry conditions at Taylor Field to put the Stamps in the Grey Cup over the Riders.
Yeah. I think the Alouettes won that year, didn't they? 1970?
I can't remember.
71 was certainly the Stamps year. But I can remember, as an Eastern kid, we used to have to wait and see these games played, it seemed like, late at night for us, because they play evening games on a weeknight in the old two-game total point thing. And I remember there was a snowstorm of epic proportions in one of the Stampeder games, and I just looked at it and said, how do people live there? It's September, it's October. How do people live in a city when it's snowing in October like that? Little did I know I'd be living here for 18 years.
Hamburg, Kriskat, Waldo, and Cameron, synchro swimming.
Yeah, yep.
1999, Calgary Hitmen playoff and Memorial Cup run.
That was the Rocket. He was asking me about that one. Well, they didn't win. You know, they didn't win. And
if they won, probably would have been on the list, right?
Yep, absolutely. And you know, there was a little bit of disappointment there, obviously losing. And then a lot of the guys from that team were supposed to go on to be great players, the Pavel Brendels, et cetera. None of them ever really did. Jared Smithson, I think, was the most successful guy, and he had a career as a journeyman. God bless him. Played a long time, but the guys with the stars never appeared. But I'd put that in the top 15, certainly.
54-yard field goal for the 1998 Grey Cup.
That was good, yes. The Stampeders have had a run of Grey Cups, and I had to choose which one. And,
right.
And partly I tended towards the older ones because at that time the Stamps were the biggest story here in town, right? And for people, when they won the Grey Cup, that was a bigger deal.
Pee Wee Smith, 1991 West Final, winning touchdown in Edmonton, kind of changed the course of the franchise, what
did
that texter says.
Yeah, it did, too. That certainly could be an honorable mention, yeah.
And that's just some of the texts we got at 960 on the top 10 moments
in Calgary sports history. Rob Kerr will be along a little later, and we'll kick around a couple of them. When we come back. Everybody's still talking about Mark Giordano's deal. We had an interesting conversation with his agent earlier this hour, Rich Winter. We'll play that again.
I was going to say, if you've missed it, we'll play it again in the 3 o'clock hour this afternoon.
We'll play it a little later. But coming up, one of his teammates, he's kind of excited about the big contract signing. We'll have that when we come back. It's The Big Show. Bruce Dobigan with you.
Calgary, the boys on The Big Show are talking sports right now. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
I just put out my hip doing the bump. Bruce Dobigan with you.
You gotta go tell him Lanny.
Oh, is that what you're here to do?
Yeah.
Oh.
There he is. The man who was there in 1980. Well, I don't have to tell you that. You knew that. Lanny McDonald. He dropped by earlier this week. The funniest part about it is he was coming in to do a promo. And so, you remember, he had to leave right away to do the promo.
Yeah, that's where that clip came from. Yeah. He's telling you what he's here for.
So I thought, okay.
Tell him Lanny.
Oh, is that what you're here to do?
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, seriously, if you don't go to Eastside Dodge, don't go, for gosh sake.
There you are. So we thought he's going to do some production stuff, whatever. And I figured, you know, maybe he'll be out in about 90 minutes, 2 hours. 5 minutes later, he's walking on the street leaving. So I guess he went in and sort
of. So he's what you're saying is he's one take Lanny.
Exactly. One slapper, top corner.
It's all good. Yeah.
It was funny. By the way, Blue Jays.
He spent more time in here with you guys than he did doing the commercial.
He could have just done as tell him Lanny sent you here. You could have sent the file upstairs and he wouldn't even have to take the elevator.
Yeah, see you later.
Could have stayed with us for a while. He was wearing his flip-flops, too. I knew he wasn't coming
for a little upset because Jordy Nelson tore his ACL.
He was. And as all Packer fans should be and as all Lions fans are, yay, we got a chance to win. Blue Jay fans are curious as to what's going on this afternoon. Afternoon game, Houston Astros, New York Yankees. Jays one game up on the Yankees after their dramatic win last night. Blue Jays, man, I'm telling you, they're the funniest team on TV. Funniest show on TV. At the end of every game, I'm laughing. I mean, how are they going to win it? Each time it's different. And I just laugh. I can't believe how they'll keep winning.
Well, I said to you this morning when you came in, I said, how did the Blue Jays win that game last night? And you and I both don't have an answer. I don't know how it happened.
Well, smoke and mirrors. And the Texas Rangers, a team that's in the running for the playoffs. A team that's had a lot of confidence. Was 8-2 going in there. Their big star, Beltre, threw it away at first.
See, Holland from Texas had the Charlie Sheen haircut we were talking about Major League the other day. He's got the haircut going on.
He and Donaldson. Wild thing. He and Donaldson should like get together. Oh, anyhow, Blue Jays win last night. Go one game up on the Yankees. Yankees are playing this afternoon. Good news. Astros just got another home run from Evan Gattis. 6-2 over the Yankees. 8th inning. So if the Blue Jays win tonight in Texas, and we'll have all the action right here at 6. 2 games they'll be up. That's what I said yesterday. What's going to happen to Texas after they get the Blue Jays counterpunch? Because the Blue Jays love to counterpunch. They like to let you sort of think you're in the game. And last night was the big counterpunch. We'll see what kind of a Texas team shows up tonight. David Price on the bump. 6:05 first pitch here right on the Fan 960. I mentioned before the break, Matt Stajan was on our sister station earlier today. No secret that he's excited about the signing of the captain, Mark Giordano. He was asked by, Ben Ennis. He was asked by Ben Ennis, what's this going to do in the dressing room?
You know what? I don't think there was ever any doubt that he'd be here long term. He's our leader. He's, he's such a great guy. We're close friends, but, he's such a great guy to begin with. On and off the ice, he's fantastic. And, everybody looks up to him. I think, he's... He is our hardest working player. For young guys coming in, you just kind of watch. And even for me being the same age as him, you just kind of watch the way he handles himself. And he's a special person for sure. And our team's so lucky to have him. He's helped turn this franchise around here in the last few years and speeding up the process. And I think, it's well deserved. I think for years to come, I don't think you could ask for a better leader in the game to help lead your franchise.
When a guy signs a 6-year, $40.5 million extension, like is he on the hook for at least the first team dinner of the year? Like, how does that work?
Oh, the guys will be all over him for sure. I'll make sure he buys me a few dinners too here. But he's very generous. I don't think that's going to be a problem. I think. Usually when guys sign a big deal, and that's obviously a huge deal, there's usually a team dinner involved. So they happen quite a bit. There's a lot of big contracts going around these days in the NHL with the high salary cap. And, it'll be fun. And, but he's a generous guy. I think hopefully we get a couple dinners out of him.
Talking to Matt Stajan of the Calgary Flames, Ben Ennis filling in for Jeff Blair, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. So you guys, it's going to be a different feeling going into this year because you made the playoffs, you won a round. There's no more, hey, pesky underdog Calgary Flames that nobody expects to do anything. There's expectations on this team right now. How does that change things going into the season?
Yeah, it's exciting. I think we have high expectations for ourselves and, I think, we want to build off last year. We had a good run with some key injuries. Obviously, our best player in Gio was hurt in the playoffs, and we were able to win around. So, I think everybody's excited. There's a lot of people that want to build off of last season. It's going to be tough, but, there's still going to be the doubters that are going to say that we can't build off of it. And the expectations are there, and they don't know how we're going to deal with it. But, you know, that's a challenge for our group, and we'll be focused. We'll be a hardworking team. And, you know, you got to play the games. I think, you know, there's in the NHL, the parity, it's unbelievable how tight it is. You see good teams every year miss the playoffs. So we know that there's a big challenge ahead, and we're ready for it, and we're hoping that all our young guys take another step. And as a team, we have to take another step.
What's it like being one of the elder statesmen on this team, being one of the veterans when you are talking about such a young team yourself, and obviously the captain Mark Giordano? Are you a vocal guy? Like how do you lead, or do you leave that to the other guys and you just lead with your performance? How does that work when you are dealing with such a young team?
I think everybody brings their own. You know, you just kind of be yourself. You know, I think I'm pretty vocal. I'm probably one of the more vocal older guys. You know, it's just kind of, you know, guys have different ways about going about things. And it's weird. It, you know, it's such a different landscape than when I came into the league. You know, the teams are so young. The average age of the team is so young. You know, when I came in, I'm 31, and I was beginning of free agency. So, It's so different, but you know, I really like you know, being a part of a leadership group and having that role as one of the older guys. You know, and I think, you know, we just have to make sure everybody's focused and you know, guys have to be themselves and enjoy it and enjoy every experience that you know, every game brings. And I think that's the way you got to go about things. Take it one day at a time. I know it's cliche, but you can't.
it's the biggest cliche there is, Matt.
It is the biggest cliche, and then hockey players say it all the time. But tell you the truth, that's all you can do, because there's so many ups and downs. And, you know, I've been fortunate to have a long career, and hopefully I have a bunch of years left. But that's how you get through it, because, you know, when things are tough, you can't look back. You got to look forward, and that's the way we do things.
I'm still working on a way to take multiple days at a time. I would do it if it were possible, but I still haven't figured out a way. Talking to Matt Stajan, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. So Alberta is kind of the place to be for hockey come the start of the NHL season, because you've got the Connor McDavid effect with your rivals in the Edmonton Oilers. And we know there is a rivalry there, a pretty significant one, especially among the fans. And those games are all always intense. Is there a bit of a sense of, hey, why are the Oilers getting so much attention? They've done nothing. This kid, I know he's got lots of promise and lots of potential, and there's already been comparisons made to Sidney Crosby and Wayne freaking Gretzky. Is there a bit of, not jealousy, because you guys won a playoff round last year, but is there a little bit of a, Who is this team, and do you feel that rivalry as players as much as the fans do?
You know what, it's exciting, to tell you the truth. I think we hope the Edmonton Oilers get as much attention as possible. I think obviously McDavid's a special player. I've never seen him play, but you hear things, you see him on TV. I think all the like, rookie tournament games in Penticton have been sold out already, and he's probably the reason for that. So there's definitely a lot of hype, and you feel it. For sure within the province, but you know, Calgary is such a supportive city for the Flames, and that's kind of what we feel, and it makes the rivalry exciting. I think you know maybe nationally the Oilers and you know, they've had a lot of top three picks, first overall picks, so there's a lot of hype, and there has been the last few years. So it, you know, going into those games, it's, you know, it's a challenge for us to make sure we prove to everybody that, you know, we're the real deal and we're the ones you should be talking about. So it's definitely growing, the rivalry, for sure. I think and I think it'll continue, especially if we keep climbing like we did last year, and if the Oilers can take the next step, there's going to be a growing rivalry, and hopefully get it back to like it was in the 80s here, because you know, that was some fun hockey for the fans, and you hear about it all the time. And I think you know, that will happen with you know, the direction that both teams are going in.
There you go, Matt Stajan. Think he's happy? Almost as happy as I am that Rob Kerr is joining us in a couple of minutes to talk about some of this stuff. We're going to continue. Going through the afternoon, we get visitors here all the time. Sometimes it's Lanny McDonald. Sometimes it's the security staff. Sometimes they come and change the garbage in the middle of one of my rambling extras. Never a dull moment. When Rob Kerr comes in with us in a couple of – I hear you mumbling in the background. When Rob Kerr comes in, we're going to obviously talk some more about Gio, the signing for Mark Giordano. We're going to talk a little bit about his big morning tomorrow. He's got to get up early. He may show up in his jammies. Between 8 and 9, he's going to interview Ken King, but they're also going to open up the phones, get your input.
Seven to eight.
7 to 8?
7 to 8, yeah. If you're on at 8 – I mean, I want you to listen to 8 at 9. That'll be good radio too, but – Ken and
Specific
I are on
time.
7 to 8 Specific as part time. Of a town hall. Yeah.
Actually, Central Time, you're on 8 o'clock Central Time, 7 o'clock Mountain Time.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
I should read these notes, shouldn't I?
No. We'll get to it.
In any event, it's very important for him, and he's going to tell us all about what's going to happen. But the important part isn't that Rob is there in his jammies. It's going to be that King will be there, and he'll be answering some of your questions. Rob and I have had a couple of questions. We'll go through those this afternoon. We'll also go through the top 10 list on our website, the top 10 Calgary sporting moments of all time. We already had some good feedback on the text line. We'll go through that again. Rob actually have to read these so we can find something to pick on with me for an argument. As well, we'll also revisit our interview with Rich Winter, the agent for Mark Giordano. Really interesting stuff about Canadian teams, about the Canadian dollar, where things are going, about his relationship and what makes Mark Giordano special. Bruce Dobigan with you. It's The Big Show. Back after this.
Sportsnet 960. Talking sports all the time. No radio? No problem. Download the Rogers Radio app and never be without Sportsnet 960 again. Sportsnet 960. The Fan.
The Big Show. Brought to you by Comedy Cave. If it's comedy you crave, come to the cave. Tickets are always $10. Comedy's so good you'll whip out your funny bone. Go to ComedyCave.com.